this is somewhat ambitious, what we're going to try to do tonight. We're going to try to review Maseches Erevin in the next 45 minutes. Not word for word. We're not going to be able to go through the entire Maseches Erevin. I'm going to be reading a lot. I wrote out every word because otherwise I'll get caught up with other things. I made a little outline of everything we're going to try to cover. So if you follow along in the outline, it'll probably be a little bit easier, maybe a little less boring if you're able to see what's going on in the outline. The first two Maseches in Shas are very firmly rooted in Dinim D'Oraisa. We have Maseches Brachos, we have Tefillah, Kriya Shema, Brachos. There are certain Brachos that are D'Oraisa. All of the assorted Shabbos-related issues in Maseches Shabbos, very, very clearly rooted in Dinim D'Oraisa. Maseches Erevin is the first and perhaps the only Masechta in all of Shas that is entirely based from beginning to end on Dinim D'Rabbanan. Now, Chazal teach us, called the Tikkun Rabbanan Ken D'Oraisa to Tikkunim. I was talking to Rav Schechter and I was telling him how that I found this so amazing about Erevin, that it's all based on Dinim D'Rabbanan. He said, to me, the most amazing part is that we don't even know which Dinim D'Oraisa it's based on. I mean, called the Tikkun Rabbanan Ken D'Oraisa Tikkunim, it's all made out of almost like whole cloth. It doesn't even mimic Dinim D'Oraisa. It's not perfectly clear what all of Erevin is based on. In fact, when Chazal want to emphasize that Avraham Avinu was Mekayim Kol HaTorah Kula Ad Shelo Nitna, so the example they give is that even Erevin, that they could have given any Din D'Rabbanan that he observes, but they use that as the obscure Din D'Rabbanan that Avraham Avinu observed. Maseches Erevin is also considered to be one of the most challenging Masechtos in all of Shas. The Zohar writes that Ani Rochev Al-Chamar, Mashiach is going to come with Ani Rochev Al-Chamar. Ani is a Rosh Tevis of Erevin Nida and Yevamos, that when people learn Erevin Nida and Yevamos, then that's going to be then Mashiach is going to come, because these are the challenging Masechtos that we have to really, really work hard. And now as we're finishing up Maseches Erevin and the Daf Yomi in the next couple of days, we understand how much we don't understand. We see how much there is to really challenge our minds with this Masechta. And a lot of times, even when we learn daf by daf, when we understand each and every line of Gemara, it's very common for somebody to finish an entire Masechta, even if you're following along, and I understand this line and the next line, without a very clear picture of the topics that were covered in the Masechta. And in this shiur, the goal is going to be to give a basic outline of the topics and ideas that we were zocha to learn over the past several months, particularly as they relate to real Erevin topics, meaning there are a whole bunch of other topics that we learned about throughout the Masechta that aren't really about Erevin. On the end of the outline, I gave a list of about 17 other topics that we learned about that aren't really Erevin related but are fantastic sheer klali type of topics. I'm going to stay away from those. I want to just discuss the Erevin topics. Let's try to summarize the main sugyas in Hilchos Erevin. The Masechta deals primarily with two types of Erevin. We have Eruvei Chatzeros, which is discussed in the first two prakim of the Masechta, and then it's again discussed in the sixth through the ninth prakim of the Masechta. Then we have Eruvei Tchumin, which is discussed in the third, fourth, and fifth prakim of the Masechta. The tenth parak of the Masechta doesn't discuss any of this. The 10th parak of the Masechta doesn't even belong in Maseches Erevin. All the Rishonim asked that right at the beginning of the 10th parak. What's it even doing here? It's a parak about Hotza'ah, which is a Maseches Shabbos topic, right in the middle of, right at the end of Maseches Erevin. It's a little bit strange, a little bit difficult to understand why that's the case, but Erevin is really in the first nine prakim. So the basic outline of the concept of Eruvei Chatzeros, or Shituvei Mavuos, is as follows. On a D'Oraisa level, it's usher to transfer things from Rosh Hashram to Rosh Yachid, or vice versa. It's also also to carry something for Amos in a Rosh Hashanah. If you carry from one Rosh Hashanah to another Rosh Hashanah, on a D'Oraisa level, you have done absolutely nothing wrong. However, Shlomo HaMelech and his Beis Din made a takana that you're not even allowed to carry from one Rosh Hashanah to another Rosh Hashanah if there are different residents in these two Rosh Hashanah. So if you carry from one house to your neighbors, or from your house to your neighbor's house, even though you live in the same chatzer, Shlomo HaMelech came along, made a takana, that's no good, you're not allowed to do that. Or to carry from your chatzer to a neighboring chatzer, even though you're in the same mavoi and you're completely surrounded by walls in that mavoi, no good. That's aser migzera Shlomo HaMelech. Now, along with the iser that Shlomo HaMelech was masakein, he was also masakein a way to fix the iser. That way of fixing the iser is Eruvei Chatzeros and Shitufei Mavuos. Once all four sides of the area are surrounded by some sort of wall, whether it be a real wall, posts, beams that are considered like a wall. Once you have surrounded on all four sides, the different residents can join together in ownership of some food. It would be a loaf of bread to join houses in a chatzer in an eruv, or any other type of food to join the chatzeros together in a shitufe mavuos. It wouldn't have to be bread for that. And they then thereby declare the entire area as one large residence, and now you're allowed to carry from house to house or from chatzer to chatzer. The basic outline of the concept of eruvei tchumen, which is topic number two in the Masechta, is as follows. Torah says, Shavu ish tachtav al yetze ish mi mekomo beyom ha-shvi'i. Person has to stay in one place without leaving that place on Shabbos. So the Gemara understands that that means that you can walk throughout your entire area on Shabbos. What's your area? Well, it could be your city if you're in a city. If you're not in a city, in the partitions that surround you, if you have walls around you, if you're not in a city and you're not in partitions, then your area is Dalet Amos. So you can walk throughout your entire area, and then you get an additional 2,000 Amos outside of your area. That's the basic concept of a Tchum Shabbos. Now Rabbi Akiva holds that this is a Din D'Oraisa. The Chum say that no, it's a Din D'Rabbanan. Even according to the Chum, though, it's possible, it's Machlokes Rishonim, but it's possible that a Tchum of 12 mil, of Yud Beis Mil, is an Issa D'Oraisa. If a person wants to be able to travel further than 2,000 Amos from his area, he has to establish his residence somewhere else. He has to make his area somewhere else and then go 2,000 Amos from there. That's what we call a Ruvei Tchumen. That could be done in two ways. It could either be done by being Ma'ariv Beraglav, by physically walking to that new location and by being there saying, okay, now this is my spot, or by making an Erev Tchumen, putting out 2 meals worth of food in that area, and therefore making it his residence for Shabbos. So that is part one. If you're following along the outline, we're now up to Roman numeral two, the four Rishuyos of Shabbos. On the D'Oraisa level, there are three different Rishuyos of Shabbos. There are three special halachic domains with regard to Hilchos Shabbos. There's a Rishus Yachid, there's a Rishus Rabim, and there's a Makom Ptur. The Rabbanon were misakein that some places that we would normally consider a makom patur on a daraisa level should be known as a karmelis. It's not a makom patur, it should be treated as a karmelis. It's asumi daraisa, as we mentioned before, to carry from Rosh Hashanah Yachad to Rosh Hashanah Rabim or vice versa. It's asumi daraisa to carry something dalet amos in Rosh Hashanah Rabim. But it's mutter to move things from either a Rosh Hashanah Yachad or Rosh Hashanah Rabim to a makom patur, or from a makom patur to either Rosh Hashanah Yachad or Rosh Hashanah Rabim. Those areas designated as a karmelis are given the chumras of both the Rosh Hashanah Yachid and Rosh Hashanah Rabim. So, it's usher to carry between a karmelis and either Rosh Hashanah Yachid or Rosh Hashanah Rabim, and it's usher to carry anything dalet amos within a karmelis. Now, let's define each of these rishuyos. The definition of a Rosh Hashanah Yachid is any area that's 4x4 tefachim, and it's surrounded by walls that are at least 10 tefachim high. How many walls? That's a major machlokes Rishonim. Rambam holds it has to be surrounded by 4 walls. Most other Rishonim hold it only needs to be surrounded by 3 walls. In any case, the last wall doesn't, whichever the last wall is, whether it's wall number 4 or wall number 3, doesn't really need to be a full wall. It could even be a simple lechi, a little pole, and that counts as a 4th wall. That closes off a tiny portion of the last side is good enough as well. The entire airspace above the Rosh Hashanah Yachid is also, no matter how high, Ad L'Rakia, is still considered to be Rosh Hashanah Yachid. Now, even if Rosh Hashanah Yachid is surrounded by 4 complete real walls, if the area is not meant for living purposes, and it's a very large area, that's what we call a karpef. So if you have an area, Yoser mi beis hasayim, larger than 2 beis sa'a, that's surrounded by mechitos, and it's not surrounded to live in. Let's say you have a giant mansion that's Yoser mi beis hasayim, but that's meant to live in, so that's absolutely a normal Rosh Hashanah Yachid, and you're allowed to carry in there. But if it's not meant, the mechitzos are not made to live in those mechitzos, and for instance, if you have, like over here, we have the water over here, so we surround the water with mechitzos, that's not to live inside that that area, that would be asur midrabanan to carry inside of it. That's the basic definition of Rosh Hashanah Yachid. Basic definition of a Rosh Hashanah Rabim is an area similar to the Machne Yisrael. That's the short definition. An area that's similar to the Machne Yisrael in the Midbar. What does that mean, similar to the Machne Yisrael in the Midbar? So one thing we know is the Machne Yisrael in the Midbar, the Gemara derives, was 16 amos wide. It had to be at least 16 amos wide to fit all the beams of the Mishkan that they had to carry through. Okay, so it's 16 amos wide. You need to be 16 amos wide in order to have Rosh Hashanah. We also know they were in the Midbar and there was no roof over them. So that's an area that a Rosh Hashanah can't have a roof. It also is not surrounded by walls. Major machlokas Rishonim, does it need to have 600,000 people that are there, that are present on a daily basis? So some Rishonim hold it has to have 600,000 people that pass through it, just like Machane Yisrael in the Midbar. The airspace, another characteristic of a Rosh Hashanah is that, unlike a Rosh Hashanah, the airspace of a Rosh Hashanah only goes up 10 tefachim. Once you're more than 10 tefachim off the ground, you're no longer in Rosh Hashanah territory, now you're in Makom Ptur territory. It's not a Rosh Hashanah anymore. That is a Rosh Hashanah. Definition of a Karmelis. Again, a Karmelis on a Doraisa level is really a Makom Ptur. It really is fine to carry from Rosh Hashanah or Rosh Hashanah to a Karmelis and vice versa. It's really a Makom Ptur. But because it's similar in certain ways to Rosh Hashanah, and it's similar in other ways to Rosh Hashanah, we treat it with the chumras of both a Rosh Hashanah and a Rosh Hashanah. A Karmelis is an area that's at least 4x4 tefachim wide. It's not made for the public to walk through. In those ways, it's like a Rosh Hashanah, 4x4 tefachim, not made for the public. But it can be a large open area with no mechitos, and in that way, it's similar to a Rosh Hashanah. Examples of a Karmelis would be a ditch that's less than 10 tefachim deep, an open field, a mound that's less than 10 tefachim tall. The airspace of more than 10 tefachim above a Karmelis is a makom ptur. It's not a Karmelis. So the only type of Rishus that still is tofes the airspace above 10 tefachim is Rishus Yachid. Rishus Rabim and Karmelis do not. What's a makom ptur? So something that's in a Rosh Hashanah that's more than 3 tefachim deep or more than 3 tefachim high but less than 4x4 tefachim wide, that's considered a makom ptur. Even though it's mutter to transfer things between a makom ptur and either Rosh Hashanah or Rosh Hashanah, we learned several times Chazal made an isser that you're not allowed to transfer things from a Rosh Hashanah to a Rosh Hashanah through a makom ptur, to use the makom ptur as the bridge to get something from a Rosh Hashanah to a Rosh Hashanah. So those are the basic rishuyos of Shabbos. Now again, if you're following along, we're up to Roman numeral number 3. How do we fix a Rosh Hashanah? So in order to be able to carry a Rosh Hashanah, the area has to be surrounded by mechitzos. A mechitza is defined as 10 tefach high partition. It doesn't have to be a wall. It could be a steep incline in the ground, and it has to be able to withstand a common wind, the ruach metzuyah. Since the Torah itself doesn't tell us anything about how to define a mechitza, you look in all 5 books of Moses, nowhere in Chamish Shulchan Shnei Torah will say anything about how to define a mechitza. Most of the halachos of mechitzos are learned from Halacha Moshe Mitzrayim, and there are 4 very basic halachos of Moshe Mitzrayim that come up a lot in Erevin and in Sukkah also. The first of the halachos of Moshe Mitzrayim is the din of lavud. Any gap less than 3 tefachim in the wall is considered to be closed off. That's halacha Moshe Mitzrayim. Using lavud, if you have a series of vertical or horizontal poles that are placed within 3 tefachim of each other, they become a mechitza, because we view the gaps as if they're entirely closed, even though there may be more actual physical airspace than there is physical wall. However, the Chacham said that walls that are made of only vertical or only horizontal poles are called a mechitza gerua. Even though lavud works, that's a mechitza gerua, it's an inferior mechitza, and therefore you're not allowed to rely on such walls when they surround an area larger than a beis hasayim. You can rely on those walls when they surround a small area, but when they surround a large area, those walls, midrabanan, are no good. The second critical halacha l'Moshe Mitzrayim related to mechitzos is good asik mechitza. It teaches when there's an existing wall, it's 10 tefachim high, we view that wall as if it continues to go straight up to the sky. That's why if you're on the roof of a building, if the roof doesn't overhang the building at all, it just comes to an end at the walls of the building, you're considered to be surrounded by walls, not midine maka, you still have to build a maka around the roof, so it's not dangerous, but midine eruv, you're considered to be surrounded by walls when you're up on the roof, because the walls of the building are considered to continue to go straight up to the sky. A third halacha l'Moshe Mitzrayim is good achis mechitza. When a mechitza is hanging in the air, we could view it as it, just like we view an existing mechitza as if it goes straight up, we view an existing mechitza as if it goes straight down. However, there's a machlokas tanaim if the bottom of that mechitza is more than 3 tefachim off the ground, if it's still a kosher mechitza. Because since gedi and bokenbo, small animals, can crawl right underneath it, maybe it's an invalid mechitza. Their ability to pass through ruins its status as a mechitza. A fourth halacha l'Moshe Mitzrayim related to mechitza is pitikra yorid v'sosim. A beam that's one tefach thick can be viewed as if it extends downward and forms a wall. It's machlokas amarayim and a machlokas rishonim how to interpret the machlokas amarayim regarding how many walls in your rishus can be based on pitikra yorid v'sosim. Can be imaginary walls that you're basing on the face of a beam like this, viewing it as if it goes straight down. However, pitikra definitely does not work in a corner. If you're missing a chunk of this wall and that wall over there in the corner, pitikra is certainly not going to close off a corner. What about a wall that has breaks in it, that has breaches in it? At what point do we say that a wall is just too broken to be considered a kosher wall? So the basic rule is, and we'll see plenty of exceptions, but the basic rule is you just look at the percentage of the wall that's breached and the percentage that's closed, and you decide whether it's still a kosher mechitza or not. A wall that's breached in a way that the breaches are less than the amount of actual wall, it's kosher. A wall that has breaches that take up more space than the actual wall is possible. So there are several exceptions to those rules, though. First exception is, if the breaches exceed 10 amos, then even if the minority is breached and the majority is wall, but the breaches are more than 10 amos, it's no good. Why is it no good? Because any breach of less than 10 amos we view as a pesach. We view as just being a doorway. Once it's more than 10 amos, we can't view it as a doorway. It therefore destroys the entire wall. Now, if the mechitza is parutz ka'omed, if it's exactly 50-50, the amount of wall equals the amount of breaches 100 exactly, then there's a machlok samarayim, whether it's kosher, if it's exactly 50-50. Now, a second exception to the rule of majority is if a Rishus Rabban passes right through the Mechitza. So then we assume, Asu Rabban Mvatli Mechitza, that the fact that masses of people are able to walk right through it takes away the status of Mechitza, even though it's Omed Merubah, you have more Mechitza than you have breaches. On the other hand, sometimes it works the other way. Sometimes even when we have more parutz than we have omed, we have more open space than we have mechitza, the mechitza could still be kosher. For example, the chacham allowed for people going to be olah l'regel, who would otherwise have a very hard time drawing water from a bar to feed their animals on the road, so the chacham allowed them to rely on pasei biraos, four L-shaped partitions, one amma by one amma in the corners, and even though there is a 10 or 13 and a third amma machlokes tanaim area of space between the posts, nevertheless, that's good enough. Those four L-shaped partitions in the corner are good enough. That's when people are traveling on the road. But even in regular neighborhoods, sometimes we allow large breaches, and the way we do that is by building a tzuras ha-pesach. In fact, when we talk about an Eruv, as in we say the Eruv is up, the Eruv is down, obviously at this point we know that we're not talking about the Eruv, that's the box of matzahs over there is the Eruv. What we're talking about is the Tzuras HaPesach, which we rely on as one of the walls that surround our neighborhoods. The Tzuras HaPesach is defined, as we've been discussing in the Tuesday Night Shiurim recently, Kanamikan, Kanal Gabehem, pole on each side, and a cross beam that runs across the top of the side post. The neighborhoods in the times of the Gemara were built very, very differently than our neighborhoods. Usually there were a lot of houses that would open up into a single chatzer, several chatzeros would open up into a single mavoi, which in turn opens into a Rishus Rabin. Now, in order to carry in such a mavoi, you have to ensure that it's surrounded by some sort of mechitza on all four sides. When there's only one opening from the mavoi into the Rishus Rabin, you have three real walls and one opening, that's a mavoi sasum, and Chazal were mekel to allow for just a simple post on one side of the mavoi, a lechi, or a tefach wide crossbeam within the 20 amos of ground across the top of the mavoi, across the opening of the mavoi of Korah, and that makes the mavoi surrounded on all four sides. The reasons Chazal were so lenient and what they allowed on the fourth wall was that a mavoi which has multiple chatzeros and multiple batim in each chatzer is really considered public enough place that the walls that surround it don't have to provide such tremendous privacy, because people aren't makbid on so much privacy in a mavoi. It's a neighborhood. It's not really your yard. In order for a lechi or korah to work for a mavoi, the mavoi has to be rectangular in shape. It has to be at least four amos long. It has to have 10 tefach high walls. It has to have multiple chatzeros, each of which have multiple batim that open up into it. If the mavoi opens to Rosh Hashanah on both ends, though, then it's called the mavoi mefulash. It has just two side walls and opens up on both ends. Then one end requires an actual tzuras ha-pesach, and the other end could have a lechi or a korah. You can't just stick a lechi on the two ends and call it a day. You need an actual tzuras ha-pesach on one of the ends. There is a machlokas amarayim, whether a korah functions as a hecker to remind somebody who's carrying there that you better not walk any further, because look, the mavoi is coming to an end, not to walk into Rosh Hashanah, or whether the kara serves as a mechitza, that it's an actual wall on the fourth side. There's also a machlokas amarayim, whether the lechi, the tent of achai pole, works as a heker or mechitza. Nafkamina would be whether lechi omin me'elav, if you have a post that was there anyway and wasn't put there with any specific intention to allow you to carry in the mavoi, would that work? If the lechi is a din mechitza, so I don't care why it's there, if it's physically there, it's a mechitza, so then it's perfectly fine. But if it's really you put there as a heker, so a lechi that was there anyway wouldn't make for the very best heker, because it was there anyway, it was there before anyone put it up. A lechi that's only visible from the inside of the mavui, not from the outside, is certainly kosher. A lechi that's only visible from the outside of the mavui, it's near mi bachutz, v'shavim mi b'fnim, not visible from the inside, that's machlokas amarayim. We paskin that that's kosher as well. In order to close off an opening in a chatzar, which is a much more private area than a mavoi, so we don't rely on a simple lechi or a kara. That's not good enough for a chatzar. A chatzar is your yard, so that people are not putting a little more privacy. So we require either pasin or a tzuras ha-pesach. What are those things? Well, tzuras ha-pesach we discussed. Pasin are made up of a single four tefach long board that covers the open side, so it has to be a lechi is just doesn't have to have any width. It's just a tiny pole that's 10 tefachim high that you stick on the side of the entrance of the mavui. But pasin have to be four tefachim long that cover that side, or it has to be two small posts, two lechis on either side of the opening. Our meaning is that we enclose everything, though, with the Tzuras HaPesach. We don't rely on Pasin. We just do everything with the Tzuras HaPesach. We don't rely on any of the lesser enclosures, not lechis, not koros, not Pasin. We just do Tzuras HaPesach all around. We use the Tzuras HaPesach even when we enclose Mavuos, because in our neighborhoods, we don't have Chatzeros that open into Mavuos. So our streets don't have the full halachic status of a Mavui. So we just play it safe. We always use a Tzuras HaPesach to surround everything. That is Roman numeral 3. Now we're up to Roman numeral 4, carrying from one Rishus HaYachid to another. So we've mentioned already, it's Mutar Midaraisa, 100% Mutar Midaraisa, to carry from one Rishus HaYachid to another Rishus HaYachid, but it was a Takana Shlomo Melech, not to carry from one Rishus HaYachid to another, unless you follow the Takana and you make an Eruv or a Shituv. Now that definitely includes carrying from a home into a Chatzer, or to a Mavui, or to another person's home. That Isser definitely does not include two chatzeros, because they're not considered separate reshuyos. Carrying from one chatzer to another is certainly mutter, provided that the items that are being carried were not in a house when Shabbos began. Meaning, if you're carrying from outside, from the yard of this chatzer to the yard, the outside area of the next chatzer, that would vaday be mutter. The problem is going to be when you want to take something out of a bayis into a chatzer, or from even if you made an erev in your own chatzer, from your bayis into your own chatzer to the next chatzer. So there are several types of Rishus HaYachid that Tanaim argue whether you can carry from one to another. Three examples of different types of Rishus HaYachid: a chatzer, which people use for normal residential needs all the time, a gag, which is a roof that people would often use for extra living space, residential purposes, and a karpif, which is an area surrounded for non-residential purposes we discussed before. The Tanaim have machlokas, are you allowed to carry from one type of Rishus HaYachid to the other type of Rishus HaYachid, from a gag to a chatzer to a karpif, from one to the other? Chum holds it's mutter to carry between different chatzeros, between different karpifos, but not between the roofs of houses that were inhabited by different families. People can also carry from their own roof to their own chatzer, but not from their own karpif to their own gag or chatzer, because a karpif is fundamentally different in the way that it's used from a gag or a chatzer. That's Shitas Chacham. Reb Meir holds, it's mutter to carry from one roof to the next, as long as there isn't a ten tefach high wall that separates the roofs, because he's concerned that people rest things on a ten tefach high mound in a Rishus Rabim if they see that you're going over a ten tefach high wall on a rooftop. And resting something on a ten tefach high mound in Rishus Rabim is a big problem, because the 10th Tefach High Mound in Rishus HaRabim is a Rishus HaYachid. You can't take something from Rishus HaRabim to Rishus HaYachid. Since a roof is more than 10 Tefachim higher than a Chatzar, it's also asur to carry from a roof to a Chatzar or vice versa. Again, that is Rav Meir's Shita. Rabbi Shimon, who we paskin like, so this is the one that we paskin the Maisa, holds that you can carry between all these types of enclosures, whether they're owned by the same person, owned by different people, from a gag to a chatzar to a karpe. If this guy's gag, that guy's chatzar, doesn't make a difference. Now, once the various residents of a chatzar join together in Eruv, if even a single guy doesn't participate, he ruins the Eruv for everybody. Every bias in the chatzar, as long as somebody is living there on Shabbos, must participate in the Eruv. So machlokas, whether the residence is defined by where a person eats or where a person sleeps. Guests in the chatzar definitely do not have to participate in Eruv, and anybody who rents or borrows a house where the owner keeps all of his furniture or muksa items that can't be moved on Shabbos is considered to be like a guest and therefore does not have to participate in the Eruv. That's probably the explanation for a hotel, why guests in a hotel probably do not have to participate in Eruv, because everyone who's staying in a hotel, the owner is leaving all of his furniture there and a lot of muksa things that you're not allowed to move out of the room, so it's not our responsibility to participate in the Eruv. There may be other reasons also, but not for now. Now we're up to Roman numeral 5, actually making the Eruv. Now that we know all this about an Eruv, how does an Eruv made? So now that we've determined how to make sure that an area is eligible for an Eruv with all these machitzos and the Tzuras HaPesach, so how do they actually make the Eruv? So when all the houses in a single chatzer join together in an Eruv, the entire chatzer becomes a single joint reshus. So to Machlokas Amraim, what are the exact mechanics of an Eruv? Shmuel holds Eruv Mishum Kinyan. Everybody acquires a portion of the house that the Eruv is kept in, so everyone shares one house. They all are members of that house. They're all B'nai Bayis. Rabba holds Eruv Mishum Dira. The place where the food is kept is considered to be a person's house, so all the members of the chatzar live in a single house. It's not that I own the house, it's that I live in that house. It's not about a kinyan, it's about that's where I'm koveya my dira. The procedure for making an Eruv is to collect bread from everybody in the chatzar, whereas we don't actually do that. We don't go around door-to-door collecting bread. What we commonly do is to have one person acquire the bread, or in our case, in most cases, a box of matzahs, on behalf of everybody in the chatzar. The Eruv bread has to be complete loaves, can't be broken loaves. It has to be a shlema, just like we do for Lechem Mishnah on Shabbos. Each participant has to have at least one grogros of bread in the box, unless there are at least 18 participants. All of our Erevin have at least 18 participants, then you only need the amount of bread that would make up two meals worth of food. Once you have 18 participants, la halacha, typically what we do is we make an Erev once a year instead of making a new one every single week. And we just leave it there for the whole year. If the food gets eaten, as long as there's some food left, you can still rely on it even for future Shabbosos. If the food gets eaten entirely on Shabbos, then it's okay to rely on it for the remainder of that Shabbos, but not for any future Shabbosos. As long as the Erev was intact during Ben HaShemashos, that's okay for that Shabbos. We say a bracha on the mitzvah of Erev, and we declare that the bread should serve as an Erev, and we have somebody lift the box of matzos, at least one tefach off the ground, to make a kinyan on behalf of everybody. And once the Erev is in effect, any one of the partners is allowed to claim his portion of the Eruv. Anyone could say, I want my piece of matzah, I want to eat it, and if we refuse to allow him his portion, that will invalidate the entire Eruv. We have to allow him his portion. If one is too poor, the Gemara gave the example, to allow others to share to take their portion, because I feel like I contributed all the bread to the Eruv and I was makne it to everybody else, but when they come and ask for it, I'm too poor to share it with them, that will invalidate the entire Eruv. A Shituvei Mavuos is very similar halachas to Eruv Chatzeros, but since a Shituvei Mavuos is not designed to establish a place of residence like an Eruv is, it's simply meant to join all the different Chatzeros that are in the Mavui together as if they were a single Chatzer, so there are certain key halachic differences between a Shituv and an Eruv. For example, a Shituv can be made with just about any type of food, not just bread, because bread is only necessary to establish residence. Also, unlike an Eruv, a Shituv does not have to be kept in a house where somebody lives. It just has to be in a protected location somewhere in the chatzer. What if the various chatzeros in the Mavoi joined together to make a shituf, but the individual chatzeros didn't make their own Eruvei chatzeros? Can they carry within their chatzer from one house to the next? We know they can carry from chatzer to the next chatzer, but can they carry within their own chatzer? So that's machlokas tanaim, whether you need both an Eruv and a shituf, or just one or the other is good enough. So machlokas rishonim had a paskin. Rambam holds if the shituf is made with bread, you can rely rely on it for an Erev as well. You only require an Erev where there's a different type of food that was used for the Shituf, because we're concerned that children will forget the entire concept of Erev. They just see that jelly beans were used, they're going to forget that there's such a concept of using a box of matzos and making a regular Eruvei Chatzeros. Shulchan Aruch seems to pass in that way. The Ramah quotes the Shita of other Rishonim, though, who are more Makel, and they allow Shituf to be made with any type of food to work in place of an Erev, and you don't need a separate Erev. Now, even though an Erev has to be made with bread, the concept of Migo teaches that since we can rely on that food for a Shituf, it can also be used for an Erev. That's how the Ramah understands it. There is a group of Rishonim, led by Rashi, who are very strict on the issue and require an Erev even when a Shituf was made with bread. We don't pass like that at Shita. When we make our community Erev, and we typically use a box of matzahs for the Shituf, and therefore we don't make a separate Erev. I mean, you may wonder, why doesn't every single block have their own separate Erev Chatzeros and have the one big box of matzahs for the Shituf? No, because we paskin that we can rely on the Shituf Emavuos that we make with bread, we can rely on that for the Erev as well. If the various Chatzeros each have a private Erev, and they joined an Erev with each other to permit carrying from one Chatzor to the next, they're also allowed to carry in their joint mavui. Similarly, if they joined in a shituf to allow carrying in the mavui, but they didn't make an erev to connect one chatzar A to chatzar B, they can still carry from chatzar A to chatzar B. What we were talking about before was an erev within chatzar A versus a shituf that connects everybody through the mavui. But there's another type of erev that connects one chatzar to its neighboring chatzar without going through the mavui, just chatzar to chatzar. Okay, Roman numeral 6, bittul rishus. Sometimes, even when people have the best intentions, they make mistakes. If a person forgot to join in the Erev and Shabbos already began, the offending party still has, there's still an option to save the Erev. He can give up his rights in the Chatzar or Mavui to each and every other member of the Chatzar or Mavui and gain the status of a guest instead of a resident, and therefore, as we said before, a guest doesn't have to participate in the Erev, so the Erev would be perfectly good. If one guy forgot to join the Erev and he was mevatel his rights in the Chatzar, but he wasn't mevatel his rights in his bayis, everybody can carry between the other homes and the chatzar. Nobody's allowed to go into that guy's home or carry between his home and the chatzar. If he was also mevatel the rishus in his bayis, then they can all carry items from his house into the chatzar, vice versa. It's totally fine. Another option, aside from that, is for everybody who joined in the Erev to be mevatel their rishus to that guy who didn't join. So not just for him to be mevatel rishus to everybody else can be mevatel their rishus to him. But since a group of people can never be considered guests, that bittul rishus only allows the individual who they're mevatel their rishus to carry in the chatzar. It's not going to help everybody else, so that's not ideal. There is a machlokas rishonim, if you have a Jew who didn't participate in the Erev, can he also do schirus rishus? If he doesn't want to be mevatel rishus, can he rent his rights in the chatzar to permit other people to carry there? Mishmur paskins that technically it would work if a Jew would do schirus rishus, but you're not allowed to do it because you're not allowed to do business on Shabbos. It's Nisr Mekka Chamemker, so you can't do a schirus on Shabbos, so that's why it's a terrible idea. Okay, Roman Rumble number 7, a goy or Yisrael mumer in the chatzar. This is very Nogayel Lemaisa, we spoke about, we dedicated a whole Tuesday night shir to this. Strictly speaking, a non-Jew lives in the chatzar, his presence should not restrict anybody from anything, because strictly speaking, Dira Sovid Chavim Lav Shma Dira, we paskin. A non-Jew living there, that's not called a Dira. However, the Chavim wanted to discourage us to live in close proximity to Gayim, so that we don't learn from their practices, from their religious practices. So Chazal instituted a halacha to make it difficult for us to live with Gayim in the same chatzar. The halacha is, carrying in the chatzar is aser unless we can convince the guy to rent out his rights in the chatzar for Shabbos. Since most Gayim, if you ask him, hey, can I rent out your rishus for Shabbos, are going to look at us very suspiciously, and they're likely going to refuse to do it, so it will discourage us from living with them, because the only way we're ever going to be able to carry on Shabbos is if we look weird and we make them suspicious of us. So when just a single Jew lives with a guy, with a single guy in a chatzar, Rabbi Lazar ben Yaakov holds there's no need for a schirus rishus. Why? Because that's so rare. Who would ever in his right mind put himself in that situation? He's going to be afraid that the guy would kill him. So since it's such an unusual case, we're not worried. We didn't have to make this takana to cover that case. A Jew who's not observant, let's say, cannot participate in Erev, because he denies the concept of Erev. He's not allowed to participate in Erev. but he could still be mevatel as rishus. If he's an Ovid of Odezara, or he's a Mechal Shabbos Faresia, or he violates Averis Lahachis, Chazal give him the status of a non-Jew, and therefore he can't even be Mevatel Rishus. Then only Schirus Rishus would work. There is a Machlokas Amorayim, whether the Schirus Rishus that we do from the guy has to be a Schirus Bria, does it have to be a very strong rental that will entitle the Jew to fill the chatzar with furniture, do whatever he wants, or maybe even a Schirus Ru'ua, a lower level Schirus, which would not entitle the Jew to do very much in the chatzar, maybe that would work also. So when we do the rental, it's not necessary to give the guy a shavar pruta, because there's no distinction between a shavar pruta and paksmi shavar pruta for a guy. That whole din of shavar pruta, that's a din in Jews, it's not a din in Bnei Noach. Since we can't rent the rishus from every single guy in our neighborhoods, we can't go door to door and ask them to be sofer rishus, so we rely on the din of schiro lekito that allows employees and farmhands of the guy to rent out his rishus for him. The rights of schiro lekito extend not just to people who are employees of the guy, but to anyone who has the rights to use the guy's house. So nowadays we rent from a government official because of the right of eminent domain. That gives them the ability and to execute search warrants and things of that nature, so other people have the right, that's the powerful officials who have the right to take the rishus to go into their homes and to close off the streets and to do things like that. Those are the people that have the power to be socher rishus, and that's what we do in our community, Erevin. We are socher rishus from government officials, from the police department, the mayor, somebody of stature. I think in Washington, D.C., years ago, they were socher rishus from President Bush. I don't know if they did it with President Obama, but someone who has the ability to shut down streets. We could probably do it even here for the president. He shuts down streets here also. Okay, anyway, Roman numeral 8, the Isser to walk past the Tchum Shabbos. Now that was one part of Maseches Erevin. Now in the next 7 minutes, we'll see if we can cover the whole other part of Maseches Erevin, the issue of Tchum Shabbos. Up until now, we discussed Eruvi Chatzeros, Shtufim Avuos, that are connected in some way to the Yisra of Hutzah. The other major topic of the Masechta, Tchum Shabbos, the Yisra to walk, even if you're not carrying anything, beyond a certain distance from your home on Shabbos. That's the third, fourth, and fifth prakim that deal primarily with the Yisra to walk beyond Tchum Shabbos. The halachs of Eruv, which enable you to walk past your Tchum, some of the halachs related to Tchum are scattered throughout other parts of the Masechta also, but it's primarily in the third, fourth, and fifth prakim of the Masechta. So we mentioned earlier, Midah Raisa, the Torah tells us in Parshas Peshalach that what seems to be a very repetitive sentence: Shavu ish tachtav, al yetzei ish mimkom ubiyam ashvi. Stay tachtav where you are, and also don't leave your place on Shabbos. So the Gemara derives two halachas from this pasuk. First, if a person finds himself outside of his Tchum Shabbos, the halacha is shavu ish tachtav, can't go beyond 4 amos from his current location. He is stuck. The second halacha we learn is that if you're in your makom, then you can't go more than 2,000 amos from that makom. Now that seems to be a real drasha d'araisa, the way the Gemara quotes it, is a machlokas tanaim, where the halachas of Tchum Shabbos are d'araisa or d'rabanan. Rabbi Kiva and Meir both hold it is in fact a real issa d'araisa, but Rabbi Loza ben Oshel Rabbi Yosef Glili holds that it's only d'rabanan, and this pasuk is only an asmachta. It really relates to carrying objects from one place to another. It really has nothing to do with Tchum Shabbos, it's just an asmachta. So as Rishonim point out, that generally accepted opinion in Shas seems to be throughout Shas that Tchum Shabbos of 2,000 amos is Drabanan. The Talmud Bavli seems to assume that all Tchumen are Drabanan. Talmud Yerushalmi says explicitly that walking more than 12 mil from your place is Nisa D'Oraisa. So Rishonim aren't sure. Does the Bavli agree to that Yerushalmi? And the Bavli, when it assumes Drabanan, was just talking about the Alpayim Amos, the 2,000 amos, or does the Bavli completely reject the Yerushalmi and hold that all Tchumen are Rabbanan? That's a machlokas Rishon. The Rambam writes, someone who goes outside of 12 mil is chayv malchus, because it's a violation of Nisa D'Oraisa of al yetzei ish mimakomo. Even though the Torah never specified how far a person cannot walk, Chazal figured Moshe Rabbeinu was telling Klal Yisrael not to go beyond the Machne Yisrael, and the Machne Yisrael is Yud Beis Mil, and the Cham Merit to Karad Rabbanan not to go even beyond 2,000 amos. But the Yisra D'Oraisa is learned from Machne Yisrael, so the Shulchan Aruch says the Yisra D'Oraisa won't apply to places that aren't at all similar to Machne Yisrael. like rivers, oceans. So if you're traveling more than 12 mil in an ocean, that's not a violation of Nisa Doraisa of traveling beyond your Tchum Shabbos. The Gemara is a machlokes where the Yisr of walking beyond the Tchum applies when you're traveling more than 10 Tefachim off the ground. Let's say you're flying, the Gemara talks about, they didn't have airplanes, or by walking on posts that are more than 10 Tefachim high, but less than 4 Tefachim wide, so they're not a Rishus Bifnei Atzmam. Interestingly, in that context, the Gemara talks about whether Eliyahu HaNavi can come on Shabbos, because he's going to fly in somehow. So can he come on Shabbos? He's going to be coming from outside the Tchum. So if there's Ein Tchum in the Malamei Asara, so he's got no problem. He'll be able to come on Shabbos. No clear conclusion about the issue. La Halacha, we're lenient for cases of Tchum Drabanon of 2,000 Amos, and we're or traveling on the ocean, but we're machmir in cases where the issue is a Da'oraisa issue. Now, even when a person has gone beyond his Tchum, he's allowed to walk within 4 Amos of where he finds himself, which is the amount of space that we assume he needs just to stretch his arms and legs. Since the 4 amas have a practical purpose to be able to stretch his limbs, we don't use a single standard for an ama. We do it based on the ama measured by that person. There are three-way machlokes tanaim, how to measure the 4 amos, with some measuring 4 amos in each direction from where he's standing, others 2 amos in each direction, so he's in the middle of the 4 amos, and others saying that he's just got to choose where his 4 amos are going to be. He chooses 4 amos in one direction or the other, and that would be fine. He just needs to pick his square. Person is allowed to walk throughout his Makom Shvisa for Shabbos, no matter how large that Makom Shvisa may be, and then walk an additional 2,000 Amos. A Makom Shvisa for a person is not who's not in a city is a little tricky. If he's surrounded by walls, the Makom Shvisa is anywhere in those walls. If he's not surrounded by walls, it's his immediate 4 Amos. If you're in an area surrounded by walls, and it's Hukaf Ladira, so his Makom Shvisa is that entire area, no matter how big it is, it could be the biggest mansion in the world. If the walls are not Ladira, then his Makom Shvisa will depend on whether the fenced-in area is a Beis HaSayim, in which case his Makom Shvisa is limited to his 4 Amos, or it's less than a Beis HaSayim, in which case his Makom Shvisa will include the entire enclosure. If you're in a city, it doesn't matter how big it is. If you're in a city, the entire city is your Makom Shvisa, and you're allowed to go 2,000 Amos outside of the city. Machlokes Tanaim, whether a person has to have Kavana to be Kona Shvisa in order to be able to carry your 2,000 Amos. Let's say a person is sleeping when Shabbos starts. So when he wakes up, is he limited to his immediate Dalet Amos, or is he allowed to go to 2,000 Amos? Gemara's Maskana is that he does need Das to be Kona Shvisa, but a sleeping person can also be Kona Shvisa, because had he been awake, he would have had in mind to be Kona Shvisa, and that's good enough. That's what the Gemara paskins. We're not going to get through all of the rest of the Eruvei Tchumen issues. Suffice it to say that there are certain circumstances that the halacha allows a person to walk a distance greater than 2,000 amos that the Gemara goes through. And as we've mentioned before, if a person needs to go to an area more than 2,000 amos from where he is, he can set up an eruv which transfers his residence again, either by bipas or by foot. Now, since being ma'ariv bipas is considered to be less than ideal, we only allow a person to do it when it's going to facilitate a mitzvah. To use a box of matzos to make an eruv tchumin is only if you're going to go visit your rebbe, go to a beis avel. A third method of acquiring an eruv, which is only permitted when a person is traveling and exhausted from his journey, is to find a landmark that you could theoretically get to before Shabbos began if you ran really hard, and say, okay, that's my makom Shvisa from a distance. That also works. One of the most challenging, interesting, overall lamdash sugyas in Shas, the sugya of Breira, comes up several times in Maseches Erevin. It comes up in the context of Eruvei Tchumen, where you're not sure if you want your Tchum Shabbos in that direction, you don't know where the Chacham is coming. That comes up throughout the Masechta, and that's a phenomenally difficult and beautiful sugya. So we mentioned at the beginning of this year, learning Erevin is not easy, even if done over a period of many years, let alone over a period of 42 minutes. Learning it in 104 days is somewhat superhuman. Even if we're not yet Bekiyim in the Masechta, it's important that we should try to leave Erevin with some working knowledge of the basic concepts that the Masechta deals with. And hopefully the summary just brought back to mind some of the sugyas, at least remind us of how many things we still don't know. And in Maseches Erevin, Hadron Alach, we should always come back to Maseches Erevin.